Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Celeste Moore, and you are listening to the Down and Dirty Podcast, aka the Double D's of Dating. This is a podcast for navigating the ins and outs of modern midlife dating. Here, we will discuss the challenges that men and women face in today's dating world. Like many industries, this one is forever changing, and I believe this platform will help those who need or want it. Today, it is the best time to take control of your desired outcome. Whether it is a marriage, significant other, life partner, or just to gain the confidence in dating once again. Every other week, we will dive in and talk about different viewpoints that seem to be challenges in today's dating arena. So let's get into today's episode. Welcome to another episode of the Down and Dirty Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Celeste Moore. And I just want to say a big thank you to everybody who continues to tune in and listen to these episodes. I truly hope that you're able to, you know, bring what you've learned back here today into your relationships. And please don't forget to give this a glowing review and 5 stars because it really, truly helps the show get recognized, which helps everybody who's listening. So thank you again. But before I jump into today's episode, I'm so excited and really honored to introduce you to my guest today. His name is Traver Boehm. Traver Boehm is the author of the books Today I Rise and Man Uncivilized. He's a 2-time TEDx speaker, men's coach, and the founder of Uncivilized Men's Movement. He helped men all over the world to become uncivilized as they wake up to the power of their hearts, the brilliance of their bodies, and the wisdom of their souls so they can blaze their own path by uniquely blending both the primal and divine within them. He is dedicated to doing his part to help end the suffering in men and the suffering caused by men by guiding them through their own journey into an actualized version of masculinity. He is also the host of the Uncivilized Podcast. Thank you, Traver, for being on today's show.
Wow, thank you for having me. It's okay. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you so much. It really is. In the last week and a half, I've really kind of Googled and listened to podcasts and really found out more information about what you do and who you are. And I just, the more I learn, the more fascinated I am about what you are doing in this movement. So
yeah, thank you.
Could you, I mean, there's such a, like, there's so much information here, but could you tell me, was there something that was there a catalyst? Was there something that set this in motion, this uncivilized movement in motion?
Yeah. Celeste, it's almost cliche. And yet I imagine so many of the men who find you or find the work or find their own consciousness, it comes from pain. It comes from a fall. Right, I was married to the, quote, woman of my dreams. We had our first kid on the way. I had the business that I really wanted. I ran a CrossFit gym. I was an acupuncturist. I felt like I was expressing myself in the ways that I wanted to. And within a year, we lost the pregnancy. She told me it was a catalyst from the universe telling her that we shouldn't be married. And the very next day, my business partner was like, nah, I'm not really sure we should work together either. So I had the classic fall. Everything that I'd worked for, everything that I thought I wanted, everything up until that point in my life that I had unconsciously called in disappeared. And I was left in a gaping hole on rock bottom with nothing but questions of who the hell am I? Why did this happen? What role did I play in this happening? And as I was coming out of that, you know, perhaps 6 months to a year later, who am I as a man? And I was 40 years old and I'd never asked that question. That question was not in my consciousness. It would, you know, it'd be like learning Chinese and then like, oh, how come no one told me about this verb in Chinese? It just wasn't in my sphere. And that question took me down a rabbit hole. And for whatever reason, my life up till that point had prepared me for that question. Because when I started thinking about it and started feeling into it and started looking at the culture and studying it, the answers landed in me in a way that resonated with other men. I had no idea what I was talking about. So to give you some context, right, I get divorced, I get through a bunch of stuff, and I write the book Today I Rise. And it's just about my own journey with divorce, how I used it to quit drinking, how I used it to quit smoking pot, how I used it to quit looking at porn, how I used that situation as a up level in my life. So I just write this book, I throw it on Amazon, and very little happens with it. Right. My dreams of like waking up the next day and being on Oprah didn't happen. I like check sales and it's like, oh, there was 2 sales this month. This isn't awesome. But it did start to sell and it did start to get passed around. And here's what was fascinating. Men would reach out to me after reading the book. I did not know this would happen. I did not expect it to happen. Most of my career as a gym owner and an acupuncturist was working with women. So suddenly, like Bob's emailing me, Steve's emailing me and saying, hey, this really helped me. Thank you. Or, hey, I have a question about this. Like, I'm about to get divorced. I'm getting divorced. My buddy's getting divorced. And instead of quitting drinking and all the things you did, he's found coke and his 19-year-old secretary. What can I do for him? And I was at a very unique point in my life that I had sold my business and suddenly wasn't a husband, wasn't a father, and wasn't working, but I had income from the sale. So I would reply to every one of these guys with a simple message of, hey, would you be willing to get on the phone with me? No idea why I was doing that, but I would get on the phone with these guys. And again, for whatever reason, my background plus the experiences I'd gone through let me see patterns. It's like, oh, you don't have a drinking problem. You don't know how to express yourself. Your marriage isn't falling apart because, quote, she can't feel. It's because you're way out of integrity. You say one thing but do another all day long. You're not bringing your own sexual needs forward in this relationship, and she can feel that. Now, I have no training in this. I'm an acupuncturist. I'm an ex-MMA fighter. I'm a gym owner. I can teach you how to swing a kettlebell, and I know points on your body to put needles. But for some reason, it made sense to me. And so this just happened for almost a year. It was like street level conversations. And at the end of that year, someone said, hey, do you know you should probably start charging for these calls? Again, I was like, charging for what? I'm just, you know, just 2 dudes talking here. But I started noticing, well, I'm having a lot of the same conversations. And so I put that together in an idea of, hey, I think, you know, you're missing this primal nature, man. You got to get out there and fuck some shit up.
Yeah.
Right. Like you're living in a little box. I can feel the tension in you that there's no adventure in your life. There's no awe in your life. You're scared of life. Or to the other guy, you're out there fucking shit up all day, but you haven't felt a thing in years, have you? Mm-hmm. You're terrified of what's going on in your chest. You're terrified of your emotions. You're terrified of intimacy. So you need to go out. You need to stop fucking shit up and start feeling shit. And so it's like that separation of the primal and divine 5-6 years ago made a lot of sense to me. And so I would say to guys, we need to have both. When I looked at the male options societally, it felt like I was being pushed one way or the other. You can either be all primal, 1950s Marlboro man, you have no feelings, just go do, conquer, build, slay, or be the opposite. Just feel. Do nothing, create nothing, have no power, apologize for having power, apologize for being a man, be as close as you can to being a woman in a man's body. And it was like, wait, I don't want to go left here and I don't want to go right. I want to walk down the middle. I want to fuck some shit up, but I need to also feel my feelings. I want to have a partnership. I want to have a relationship that's built on connection, that's built on something other than, you know, sex and alcohol. And so I presented that to the world, and now my life is radically different.
That's so, I think for you, you know, you said the catalyst, losing a child, losing a wife, yeah, losing a business was your completely, you know, rock bottom. And instead of you just like losing yourself, you looked inward, but you created something of this that was missing. And I love the research you did. I love that you were able to just get on a call, just very organic, mm-hmm, and just talk, like you said, another brother to another brother, man to man. Like, this is what I see. This is what's missing. This is what you need. It's really so beyond self-aware. You were able.
I felt, in hindsight, so I remember the day my ex-wife left. And I remember sitting on a couch in my house, Celeste, being like, I can't believe this isn't happening. This isn't happening. This isn't happening. Like, what just happened? Because it came out of nowhere. It was the classic, like, she decided to leave 6 months prior. And then, so we stopped having arguments. Everything was great. We were having sex. It was like, wow, this is amazing. We've turned a corner, and then poof, gone. And I remember hearing a voice in my ear. And I'm not a religious person. I'm not like, and it was Jesus. I don't know who it was or what it was, but essentially it said, hang on. If you can get through this, you will come out on the other side in the ways you've always wanted to be. Now, that is some divine shit for a dude who used to punch people in the face for a living and swing a kettlebell. But I listened to it and I felt it. And I was like, you know what? I think this may be true. There are parts of my life I'm not proud of. There are parts of my life that I don't want to continue. There are ways that I want to express myself in the world that I haven't been able to, or I have felt stifled. Now, what if I get to use this terrible, horrible, gut-wrenching situation as a catalyst to learn how to do that, or to become the man who can do that freely? Now, that is beyond my scope of understanding at the time. I'm punching way out of my weight class, but just went, okay, you know what? What else am I going to do? I don't want to keep drinking. I don't want to keep getting high. I don't think my sex life should be between me and my laptop. I want to write in ways that I've never written before. Like, I wrote a blog for our business. That's how my writing career took off. But it was a gym. You know, there were constraints. There was like, hey, you can't talk about this. We also need to get members in the door. And so I felt like suddenly I could like rip my shirt off and just have like freedom written across my chest. And I got to do all the things I really wanted to do. Now, there was a price for that, as you said. I went to therapy, like a lot of therapy. I went to workshops. I went to men's groups. I sat in a pitch black room for a month. I did ayahuasca. I got on a TED stage. Like, I went through all of these initiations that I now help men work through themselves, or say, hey, do you realize? I was just on the phone a second ago with someone saying, this is an initiation. Do you see this? Like, it's so magical how you've burnt your life to the ground that this only can happen for you to rise out of that, the ashes, in a different way. Or guess what? We'll have this conversation 3 years from now when you've burnt it to the ground again, because you didn't come out in the ways that you wanted to. And I think that's such a missing piece for so many men. They go through divorces. We go through breakups. We go through loss of parents or children or whatnot. And instead of going, holy shit, this is going to suck, what can I do with it? We go, okay, we're not allowed to feel pain. We're not allowed to have emotion. We're not allowed to express this. I'm sure you've heard this before, but the advice I got was during my divorce was like, fuck your way through it. Drink your way through. Hey, when can we take you out and get you drunk? As opposed to, awesome, man, for the next 2 years, you're going to be in an incubator. It's going to marinate you in a way that you'll come out and possibly change the world. No one said that. It was like, bro.
Yeah. I can't imagine those words came out of anybody's mouth.
Yeah, right. People told me I was crazy when I quit drinking when my ex left. Like, oh, you're just overreacting. Oh, this is just your way to get control of things. I was like, I did not like sitting in bars, paying $15 for a beer, talking about football. I'm sorry. There was a part of my soul that was like, please stop doing this. This is not what we're here for. And I think once men taste the alternative, man, I've had lunch conversations, sober as you can be, that I've walked away from either in tears or just so deeply moved by the level of connection, maybe even with another man, that I would trade that 1,000 days out of 1,000 over sitting around bullshitting about the Giants and the Cowboys. And I'm a Giants fan, right? Yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, no, I think one of the biggest things I'm taking away is like, you know, we're born, I mean, whether or not you're religious or not, but we're born with a soul. And so much of our life, so much of the day-to-day, the rat race, if you will, work, kids, you know, that kind of thing, we forget about what feeds our soul. or we don't even know how to feed our soul. And this is, I know we're talking mostly about men here, but I've gone through this similar feeling, the similar movement in the last couple of years of my life, where because I've been in survival mode for so long, I forgot about that. So now that I'm getting out of that, what makes my soul just sing? Just like, what's my church, if you will, to put a in quotation? Yeah. And in finding that and doing that has just been like, I get chills on my body because there's nothing, you can't really put that into words. So you are doing this. You were putting it into words for somebody. And I hate to say it because it's so stereotypical and cliche, but you know, like you said, our society has made men, they're not able to feel. If you feel, if you cry, if you talk about your emotions, you're a pussy, right? If you, if you don't, you're going to blow up. So it's this dichotomy of like, okay, well, where am I? Where do I fit in? Where does man fit in society today?
For sure. You know, one of my greatest mentors and teachers, a guy named Dewey Freeman, and I met him a couple of years ago. He's a freak savant equine therapist in his 70s. Like, he's been a therapist almost as long as I've been alive. And the first time I met him, he took me up and to introduce me to his horses and said, do you know, horses need two things in the world. They need to know that they're safe and they need to know where they fit in the pack. And I went, holy shit, I need that. Men need that. Women need that. Children need that. We all need that. I just got chills. And we're at a time specifically with men that we don't know where we fit in. We're at this cultural kind of intersection of, we don't need you anymore. We've heard that for decades, right? We don't need you. We don't need you. We may not even really want you. But then the other side of the swing is, oh, we need you to step up. We need you to lead. Where are all the powerful men? Where are all the good men? And we have this clash of those two ideas. And so a lot of men then look at the world and go, well, there is no place for me, which then, and a lot of guys don't want to hear this, they then don't feel safe anywhere. We feel safe when we feel needed. And I'm not talking like, oh, I think someone's going to break into my house and beat me up. But emotionally in the world, I talk to a lot of men who go, yeah, I don't feel safe because I don't know what to do. I don't know why I'm here. Suddenly, just the 3D requirements of get a paycheck, don't drink too much, and don't beat your wife, that's not enough anymore, as it should be. But it hasn't been replaced with anything substantial. So we're saying, hey, the old path is now gone and irrelevant. Okay, cool. What's the new path? Well, there isn't one yet. So try not to just hang out in the middle and be lost. And so that's where I try to come in with the movement and with an actual path. Now, I got asked on an interview last week, what would your life have been like if uncivilized existed for you in your 20s, in your 30s, when you were going through your divorce? And I said, I would have felt like I knew what to do. I didn't know what to do with those years. I didn't know what to do with those decades. I just fumbled kind of from job to job to job and relationship to relationship, but there was no clear path. There were no elders. There were no guides. There were no older men saying, hey, this is what you do in your 20s. This is what you do in your 30s. This is what you do during a divorce. This is what you do if you're drinking too much. This is what you do if you feel lost. And now we get to come in and provide that for men. And I watch them thrive, right? I feel it. I know guys who I have seen 2 years ago were a train wreck. And this, I didn't give them religion. I didn't say like, hey, by the way, if you keep doing this, you're going to burn for eternity in this thing called hell. I said, hey, have you thought about another way of being? Here's some ideas. What are you building? What do you want to do with your life? What would you want to do with your life if women didn't exist? And no, I don't want that at all. But what would you do? What would you do differently? And it's these questions that make men then come internal and go, actually, you know what? I think I want to sail around the world and write a novel. Like, cool, can you do that financially? Absolutely, I can. Then why aren't you doing it? Wow, what would people think? Blah, 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 blah. Right? Or, hey, I actually do want to be a father. I do want to be a husband. Or I do want to be in a non-traditional relationship scheme. And this hasn't been available to me up until 5 years ago when everybody in San Francisco became poly and it became a thing. Right? Yeah. Whatever the changing society is, we haven't given men a lot of choice. And there are people who will argue with me about that, but on the undercurrent has not been a lot of choice. And now suddenly they're presented with all the choices, but no guidance on what choice to take.
That was really well said. Because, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'm teaching men how to be at a very much different level, right? More of a surface level. I'm going to be 100% honest. It's how to show up in the world, how to treat a lady, all of these things. But they're also this, there's just huge confusion. It's like, I know, even the women who are doing it all, I said, stop and allow him to have a purpose. Let him open the door for you. Let him do these things because, yes, you can do it yourself. And we've voiced that. We've, you know, this whole movement of, you know, equal rights doesn't mean that we're pushing the man out. It's just a different sector. So how do we, it is this very confusing time for not only men, but women, right?
For sure. I agree with you completely. I speak mostly about men and to men, but I listen to a lot of women. And spent the first 3 years of my career just getting feedback from women because it hadn't caught on with men yet. They're like, what is this thing? I'm not really, why do I need men? It was just women. Like, hey, I have a son. This is super important. Hey, how did, my husband would definitely need this work. I wish my ex-boyfriend had found your book. And I would talk to equal numbers of women. It's so confusing right now. And I think a lot of the reason it's confusing is because we're transitioning out of a transactional relational paradigm, and we haven't fully transitioned into a co-creative paradigm yet. So we still see a lot of men who are like, well, I'm not going to share my emotions until we have this much sex. And we have women saying, look, I don't need a man because now I have my own paycheck. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, cool. Well, I see a lot of people who are angry and a lot of people who are lonely. And a lot of people pointing fingers at it's us versus them, them versus us. And in the middle of all that is loneliness. In the middle of that is desire for an actual relationship, for actual connection, for actual intimacy. That's there by choice. That's the key word. I get it. My partner doesn't need my paycheck. And I don't need to be in a relationship to have access to sex or intimacy. So I'm here because I want to be here. She's here because she wants to be here. And we haven't quite gotten the masses there yet. And there's a lot of letting go of the anger and the blame and the resentment and the entitlement, right? There's that stuff's just like swimming around out there pretty hardy. But we've dropped into something a little bit deeper too of what does your soul want, right? Your soul doesn't care if he's 6'6" and has a 6-pack and 6 inches. And his soul doesn't really care what her body count is or what her social media thing is or how much money she makes. And it's we don't give a shit about that. But that's the places that societally we're arguing and attacking each other as opposed to sitting down and going, hey, man, what do you want for your life? And I would say this to women, too. I've said it to them. What do you want for your life? Away from all of this patterning, away from all this conditioning. You know, I started the movement in the middle of Me Too, Celeste.
Oh, wow.
Right? And I would get women over and over and over who would comment on my work, and especially in the DMs of like, I don't need a man. I don't need a man. I don't need a man. I'm like, okay, cool. And I would ask, but do you want one? And there'd usually be like a day delay in the response. And they would say, yeah, I do. I do. But I want one who's conscious. I want one who's intentional. I want one who's kind. I want one who's not going to be abusive. I want one who's not going to punch holes in the wall when he doesn't get his way or act like a 14-year-old in a 190-pound body. And I go, that's completely legit. He wants the same thing on a different level, right? A conscious woman, an awake woman, an emotionally intelligent woman, a responsible woman. And so I feel like we're getting on track, but we just haven't gotten there yet. And yeah. That's where I think there's so much angst in the culture.
Right. I think there's, how do we get to that cohesiveness, right? How do we get those two healthy individuals? I know that you're doing your part with the men, and I really, really love that. And I did some personal work years ago. You know, they've got these personal development and leadership training and stuff like that. But I think there's such a big component missing to that. There is... okay, let's get ugly. Let's get real. Let's show up for who we are and let's let people let us know how we're showing up. And yeah, it fucking hurts and it sucks. And right. But how do you grow if you're not getting raw and real?
Right.
And I think that's something that you are doing with this movement. And yeah. I think it's probably more important. I'm not saying more important, but it's so needed for men because it's just never been acceptable. It's never been okay to have these conversations when please God, yes, please have these, please work through your shit so that we can have real connections. You know, that's just,
I love that you've used the two words out of the three that we kind of have as a tagline. And it's raw, real, and relational. And that's a big missing component, I think, of the self-development world. It is very narcissistic. It's very self-focused, as it needs to be at a certain point or for a certain point. But the relational piece, that's also, especially on the men's side, has not existed, right? Most guys come to me or come to my work because of some relational breakdown. And what we find is like, hey, man, it's not that you don't know how to relate to your wife. You don't know how to relate to you. You don't have a relationship with the guy in the mirror. You don't have a relationship with your heart. You don't have a relationship with your soul. You have an unconscious, let's call it that, an unconscious relationship with your cock, but you don't know who you are, right? So then how do we ask you to be in relationship with a woman or with a man? Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If you're not in relationship with yourself, if you're not in relationship with other men, you know, non-sexually, how do you jump all of that and go right into, yeah, I'm great in my marriage? I don't think you do. There's like a through line that's getting missed. Like we got to crawl, then we learn to walk, then we learn to run. Most of us one day wake up and we're sprinting in a marriage and going like, well, I don't even know how to crawl. I don't know how to walk. What? And she just wants me to run faster. But I don't know what to do. No one's taught me. So yeah, I'm with you. Raw, real, and relational. Like that paradigm, we just like took that and plugged it into society. Because I've seen it. I see it at workshops. I see it at events. I see it with guys all the time. They're willing. But we have to be taught. Mm. It has to be modeled. And what we have to do is come out the other side of a raw, real experience and have it stay relational. Where so many men have been raw, have been real, and then have been shamed, have been left, have been put down. Like I talk to guys all the time. We're like, hey, I did get vulnerable. And it wasn't the other dudes who called me a pussy. It was my woman, right? She begged me and begged me and begged me to be vulnerable, to be real. And I did. And now she's gone. And I can't argue with that. I can't be like, well, next time it'll be different. Hopefully next time it is different because you found a different quality of woman. But it's either that or what they normally do is go, okay, cool. I learned the lesson. I will not share. I will not be open. I will not be vulnerable. And then boom, get in a relationship with a woman who's like, hey, I need this. This is the nourishment. This is the nutrition that I need relationally. And the guy's like, not a fucking chance. I learned my lesson last time and I really like you. So I'm not going to do it. And I can't argue with those experiences, Celeste. I can't.
Yeah.
Right. Who am I to come in and be like, no. Try it again. Right. I can't.
Yeah. So hopefully there's a new woman that's not with those qualities because, I don't understand that. I don't understand how women, we've become so, all we long for is someone to open up. And all we long for is them to be vulnerable and tell us how they're really feeling and then shut it down with calling names or you're not a man or whatever these crazy things that we women say. And that's got to, all that hard work and then just to shut it down again. I mean, I know we have our own issues and our own things that we've got to work through because you're right. We're changing and it's we don't know where we're at, even for women, right? We want this high value man and, we want this and we want that. But we're still independent and, you can have everything, but you can't have these two sides that are polar opposite.
Right. It's a very confusing time, I think, just to speak openly. Mm-hmm. I talk to a lot of people who don't know where they land in the middle of a lot of societal messaging. And I understand why feminism came around. I have two older sisters. I'm so grateful for it. Like my sister's boss can't like spank her butt in a meeting and have it be okay. Like that shit was not okay. I'm so glad Me Too happened. It really did shed light on every woman having some level of issue with a man at some point in her life. And there is an after effect. And there could have been a different outcome for both sides, but there wasn't. And so we have to land where we are and say, okay, what do we do now? Men, how do we claim our sovereignty, tap into something deeper than surface level, and not get blinded by the attraction of a woman and actually drop into, like, who is she really? And has she done her work, right? Has she? It's a real question. And I'm sorry that going to a yoga retreat for the weekend and reading Eat, Pray, Love is not doing your work, right? Has she gone through her own shit? Does she know who she is? Does she know what she wants? Is she working on her own reactivity? These are things that we also haven't given men as a standard to say, hey, I want you to be asking these questions of the woman in front of you instead of just staring at her tits and hoping you get access to them, right? Yeah. Like we as men have to hold a higher standard of our own partners, but that hasn't been in the culture either. Male, as you know, male preference is often demonized. It's like, how dare you have that? You're a misogynist if you want these qualities in a woman. And so we're in this rather like mix and soup and kind of jumbledness relationally. But if we come back to men, I'll just ask them the question over and over and over. What do you want? What do you really want? And Celeste, I've worked a number of guys through this exercise that I think is really helpful. I'm like, what does your ego want? List it. You know, I have a fucking G-Wagon in the driveway. That is not my soul's car. That is my ego's car. Period. Now, what does your heart want? Oh, I want to have a relationship that's connected and intimate and loving. I want a house. I want a dog. God willing, if someday I want kids. Okay, what does my soul want? My soul wants to affect the consciousness of the planet. My soul will give up the wagon and my relationship to do that. So I have to have access to all three and be willing to listen to all three, because each one will reorganize my external life if I let it. But cutting one off and pretending that it doesn't exist, that's a great recipe for addiction. It's a great recipe for misery. It's a great recipe for anger and resentment and all the things that a lot of men experience.
So in your experiences with men, do you feel like addiction is one missing component, or do you feel like they're all different?
That's a beautiful question. I find that it's used for a couple reasons. One, it's just a numbing agent. That if you, whatever you push down will come out sideways. Whatever you suppress will come out sideways. So I was not fully expressed sexually in my past relationships, let's say, especially my marriage. So I looked at a lot of porn. That's how I got that suppressed need met. Now, I didn't have the skill, training, permission, or wherewithal to sit my ex-wife down and say, hey, I really want to play in these areas. I think this is something really fun and exciting. And I don't know why, but a part of me feels like it wants to express itself that way sexually. I didn't do that. Instead, I drank, I got high, and I looked at porn. So I think that's a lot for men, is a lack of self-expression that they haven't given themselves permission for. Two, and this is a big one, so, and for you guys listening to this, I can't tell you the depth of pain that I can tell you, like how much pain so many men are in. Until you have held a man in your arms and listened to him wail about the shit that he's lived through, we will not as a culture accept that men have trauma. I mean, the unbelievable shit that I've heard after, you know, years of men's workshops where I'm like, I'm shocked you're not a serial killer or a heroin addict. Because if that had happened to me, I don't think I'd be, you know, standing upright. So I think it's also a management tool for a lot of guys who don't trust therapists, who are deeply ashamed because it may be, you know, sexual abuse that's happened in their past or physical abuse that's happened in their past or stuff that they witnessed when they were too young to do anything about and now still carry shame around that, right? That is a big reason why a lot of guys drink, smoke, do what they do, exercise, overwork, etc. It's because there has not been an opening for that pain to come out. It hasn't. There just hasn't. Societally, there hasn't, or even structurally, right? One of my teaching partners, Michael Gay, says, before we do really deep work as a group, we'll say there's some things that are too big to put down alone. So you're fucking carrying it all by yourself. I get you. You're doing it. You've managed to create a system that works for you. It's got a little bit of addiction. It's got a little bit of avoidance. It's got some anger. It's got some outbursts. That's how you manage this pain. Because you know that if you try to put it down yourself, it'll fucking crush you. And so, yeah, we're going to get you in a room with 20 dudes, a couple therapists, some guys that have been through the work, some guys that have been through some shit and put it down themselves. And we're going to say, let us carry it with you. Actually, let us help you put this down, even if it's for an hour. Those are the guys that then go home and go, actually, I don't need to drink 5 nights a week. I don't need to get high 4 times a day. I don't need to work 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, because they're finally unburdened of this extraordinary pain that they've carried, you know, sometimes since they're 2 or 3 or 4 years old. Again, the shit they've lived through is astronomical. And society will look at them and be like, you drink because you're weak. You jerk off to porn because you're fucked up sexually, right? You overwork because you're aggressive and it's your ego. That we don't look back and go, what happened to you during that divorce? What happened when your mom brought 5 different boyfriends in a month and 2 of them raped you, right? Like, we don't ask, that's not where our natural proclivity of questioning goes. It's the like, what's wrong? That guy needs to man up. You need to do better, right? So to answer your question, that's a lot of it in my experience.
Yeah.
And then I think if we drop down, even if it's not trauma-based, which is so big, I don't want to skip that. It's so big. A lot of guys aren't doing what they want to do, Celeste. Like, they haven't tapped into that soul purpose. They haven't tapped into that heart purpose. It's like you said, you're in survival mode, right? When I was 22, I needed a job. I wasn't like, what does my soul want to do right now? It was like, I have rent to pay now.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. I'll do this thing I don't like doing, but they pay me. Mm-hmm. And then I get bumped into a higher level of the thing I don't like doing, but they pay me more. Then guys get married and like, cool, now I have a wife and a house and kids, and now I'm locked into this thing that I don't really want to do. But like, what am I going to do? Like, pull the kids out of school and sell the house and, you know, become a painter because I really love it? No, they get trapped. So many men feel trapped. And I think a way to deal with feeling trapped is addiction.
Yeah, I hope that wasn't rude. I was giggling because there's so such truth to right. What you're saying. And I don't think it's funny. I just think that, you know, yeah, what am I going to do? Take the kids out of school and, you know, become a painter and just like, right. This is life because now my soul's happy again.
Right.
It's a vicious cycle. And when do you start teaching these men? I mean, that's right. That's, I think, at any age, but I mean, the younger, the better.
Yeah, the younger, but think of what we're competing with. We're competing with the civilized world. We're competing with a society that says, if you're fat, sick, addicted, hooked on meds, and working for someone you don't like, as long as you have a nice house and a couple cars and a 65-inch TV, you're doing great. So I actually get most people, like Jung said, there's no coming to consciousness without pain. There are openings when we have big loss. Mm-hmm. For all of us. I remember even before this work thinking like, oh, like my grandparents died. I'm going to rethink my life a little bit. Oh, I went through a major breakup that wasn't my divorce. Like, is this what, oh, I think I want to go to grad school. You know, we have natural openings when our little system wheel gets interrupted or gets shattered. That's when a lot of guys come to us or come to me and go, hey, I think I have an opportunity here. I don't want to keep doing what I'm doing.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
He's like, it has to almost come from a loss. Mm-hmm. So if things are going great, right, or like kind of great, but you want more, that's a really tough place to be. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like the relationship that's 95% perfect, but the 5% like, oh, but man, like I really want someone who X. That's a way harder position to be in than like, this relationship sucks, you know? I found her cheating for the 4th time. I think I may want to shift. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense because I think like for me, just my biggest growths in life have been at a point of loss or point of change where I'm lost and not sure where to navigate from. So that makes a lot of sense. Well, I wanted to talk about sacred sexuality.
Sure.
Because I think I love my audience, yes, you, everybody listening loves the topic of sex. And sure. What you talk about is so different than, you know, typical, how to spice up your, you know, sex life and so on and so forth. And, you know, what's kinky, what's not. But when you talk about sacred sexuality, what are you teaching men in these workshops or coaching about this?
I use this phrase, and this is sort of the entry point and the starter point, is that I want you to get beyond friction, that friction is easy. That's like I'm rubbing up against something. Something's warm and wet, and I'm sliding around in it. Great. That's amazing. That's awesome. That's why the species continues. If it wasn't cool, we wouldn't do it. But there's more to it, right? So I ask every man, and I ask every man to ask their partner, what would be most expansive for you that we're doing in the bedroom? What would be most expansive outside of the bedroom that we can play with in the bedroom? So let's take this for example. I have a partner who is struggling with her voice in the world. She wants to say things, she wants to put content out, but she can't. There's some block. She's been shamed, she's been guilted, she's been told, etc. So for example, I may say, cool, here's what we're going to do. And I'm taking a leadership role in this position. You're going to be super vocal during our sexual play. I'm going to ask you questions. I'm going to have you tell me things. You're going to be speaking the entire time. I get it. It's going to be really uncomfortable and awkward for you in the beginning. And we're just going to fuck our way through it and celebrate you as you do it. Now, I just made that example up right now, but I've been in so many situations with partners where then what happens? They get this micro experience of, wow, my voice matters. What I say is celebrated. And that scenario is then infused with the greatest energy that we have, the creative energy of sexuality, of sexual energy. So the imprint left on that person, even if it's only 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour of play, is I had an opportunity to speak. I had an opportunity to share my voice. I had an opportunity to put my voice out in the world. And not only was I celebrated, but I was celebrated with orgasms, which are one of the best celebration tools, let's call it, to be obtuse, on the planet. That's what would be most expansive, right? Your classic DS situation is on the woman's end. Cool. Tell me about you. Like, how many submissives have said this? I'm a mom of three. I run my own company. I make decisions all day long. I'm so decision fatigued. I want to be in a situation where I surrender control, release, get out of my head, and I don't have to make a single decision. Now, obviously, there's safety and consent and all the things that we're mixing in without saying, but that person, that woman, then gets to experience an hour of not making decisions, of not being in charge, of not being in her head and being in her body. That will have a carryover after the scene, after the sex, after the play. She will have a highly infused pattern in her body, not just in her head, but in her body, that she can release, she can let go, she can surrender, and she can trust. Now, I've done this a number of times. I've done this a lot, and know what happens with that woman for the next 3-4 days, next week, is that, wow, work's a lot easier to deal with. I'm much more patient with my kids. I actually feel wonderful in my body as opposed to feeling anxious, intense, and all the things. So the play, what we did in the bedroom, which was, by the way, was fun as fuck and high and juicy and sexy and amazing for both people, didn't end when the sex ended, which also we can say, unfortunately, is when the guy came. It actually ended a week later or a month later because that person got to experience something that they didn't get to experience out in the real world. And we can take that idea and make it as kinky as we want, but just to keep it relatively clean for this conversation, That's a big deal to me. And so when I get guys who are like, hey, I want to experience more than just, you know, they've gotten past, like, I want to last longer. I want to keep my dick hard. I want to make her come. Like, cool, you've gotten the frictionist basics down. Now, what else is there is a really interesting question. It was a good friend, Jamie Thompson, who's a sex coach, used to say that the bedroom is the most unexplored realm of self-development, right? And now I don't use it as like a Tony Robbins seminar. God bless,
walk on
Tony.
Fire now.
Right, exactly. Like, we're not setting goals in there.
But, so good.
But imagine how different the world would be if men actually said, oh, there's so much more than me getting off or her getting off or me keeping my dick hard or me pleasing her and, you know, making the 9 minute mark. Instead of saying, whoa, there's a whole language after this. There's a whole set of possibilities. Because what I just described, what it requires is an immense amount of trust. Now that requires an immense amount of integrity. That requires an immense amount of communication. So you don't get to play in the beyond friction realm if you're lying to your partner, if she doesn't trust you, if you don't trust her. So it necessitates a much deeper sense of intimacy, period. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
That's why I view it, you know, I've studied Tantra. I've hung out in the sacred sexuality circles. And what I found was I still found it lacking. Mm-hmm. I found it wasn't grounded. I found there were a lot of people who were just trying to bypass their pain or whatever, or predators that were like, cool, now I'm a sacred sexuality instructor, dude. But people weren't getting to, why are you doing this? Can it lead to a higher connection to God? Absolutely. If that's what's most expansive, like, hey, I want to feel God. Cool. Then it's going to take a little while, right? But we have to first get beyond friction.
Mm. Yeah, I like that.
That makes sense.
Yeah, no, it made a lot of sense. And I think the trust, the communication, what you said, but that all makes sense.
Safety, consent,
right, safety,
yeah.
Right. You've got to have those.
Intimacy.
Right. To further that. That makes so much sense. Well, thank you for kind of talking about how you view and how you talk about and teach to these men about sacred sexuality. One last question. And this was on the personal note.
Sure.
What was one of your favorite dates and what was it?
To think about this.
Can be in any relationship.
That's a stumper, Celeste.
I seem to stump a lot of people. I don't mean
here's
to.
Here's what I'll tell you, because it was an integral date in my, like, coming out of nice guy-ness, and it was a definite paradigm shift. So it's probably not the answer that you would expect. I took a woman, I'd met her very quickly at a dinner, and she lived like 2 hours away from me. And reached out to her and said, hey, I want to take you on a date. Will you come down and, like, let's meet in the middle? And she's like, I don't really know you, but whatever. Like, I'm willing to, sure. We had mutual friends. So there was some connection there. Now, here was my thought. I was like, I found an escape room. You know those?
Mm-hmm, of course.
Right? But this one was based around darkness. Like, it was going to be dark. And I was like, oh, I did this month-long dark thing. This will, I'm into the darkness. It will require, like, us working together as a team. They'll be touching. We'll force closeness, et cetera. I was like, this will be super fun. So we meet. We go right to the escape room. What I don't know from this experience is that they were going to put, like, jihadist black hoods on over our heads at the start. Like, we'll be completely blindfolded, like, with hoods on our heads. And we'll start at different ends of the room and slowly have to work our way together. So we'll be alone for the first half hour of this experience. So about 90 seconds into her hood being put on, I hear screaming, like, get this fucking thing off of me. Get me out of here. Get me the fuck out of here. And I'm like, okay, this is not going well. So I pull my hood off, find her. She's in the hallway, like, on the verge of tears. And I'm like, okay, didn't know that was going to happen. Are you willing to come back in? I'll tell them no hoods and that we're going to start together and we're going to go through this thing. And she's, like, hyperventilating and calms down. And we end up doing that. And we have one more incident of, like, we go to the restaurant that I chose and it's closed. We have, like, oh shit, what happened? We go next door. Long story short, at the end of the date, where I'm like, hey, thanks for coming. Like, get home safe. And she goes, she says to me, you literally took everything that I hate in the world and you put it into a first date. And I leaned in and kissed her and said, you're welcome. You'll never forget me. Now, we ended up dating again, but the relationship didn't work out. Now I say, why was that one of my favorites? Or why was that one of the most impactful? Because 3 years prior, I would have been like, I'm so sorry. I can't believe that happened. Please let me make it up to you. And I would have been a wreck and worried that,
you know, I didn't know what this woman wanted. And so I chose him poorly and I should have. All the nice guy, like, oh, it's all me, instead was like, I know it wasn't the best, but look, we had a good time and now you won't forget me. And I walked away from that experience going, I'm not supposed to be a mind reader as a dater. I'm allowed to make mistakes. And again, we went out again. So there was an impact there. But I always share that story with nice guys. Like, I work with a lot of quote nice guys to say, like, you're allowed to have things go wrong. And it doesn't mean that you're wrong or that you're a bad person or all the things that we kind of self-deprecate and put ourselves through. Yeah. So that's my answer.
Yeah. The way that you dealt with it was like, yeah, shit, that sucks. Shit. Okay. But you won't forget me.
Yeah.
That was classic. I mean, that was just such a great way to.
Yeah. I don't recommend, like, it's not a good thing when your date is screaming and saying, get me the fuck out of here. I don't want that to be right. The bar. Like, please don't let that be the takeaway, guys.
It's his reaction. Hello. Oh my gosh. That's amazing. I love your laugh, by the way. It's so joyful. Well, you know what? There's so much more that you have to offer. And I know that everybody can find you. It'll be all in the show notes.
Yeah. Manuncivilized.com.
Manuncivilized.com.
The book is called Man Uncivilized. I'm on Instagram. I'm easy to find. Uncivilized Podcast. Yeah. Guys, if you heard something here, or women, if you heard something here that resonated, hit me up on Instagram. Let me know. I love to talk to an audience. I love to talk to people and love to know what works and you know, where are people at? Celeste, I still go back to that year on the phone. I still am on every Thursday. I just take random calls from guys. I'm like, hey, what are you going through? What are you dealing with? What do you want? Where are you at? And I love it. My like business consultants are like, don't do that anymore. Like, charge $1,000 for that. Like, no, I really love to talk to people. So
yeah.
I'd love to hear from anybody who listened to this and was impacted.
That's so great. Well, thank you again for being on today's show. And I look forward to hopefully having another one of these conversations since you have so much beautiful knowledge to share.
Thank you for
having
me.
Thank you, Traver. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Come and hang out with me on Instagram at CelesteMoreImage. Let me know your thoughts on today's episode because I always love hearing from you all. You can find all the links and resources in the show notes of the episode on my website, CelesteMoore.com. Okay, that's all for now. I'll see you in the next episode. See you next time, friends.